You're listening to Inside Public Procurement by Bonfire, a Unisolutions brand, a show celebrating the unique stories and heroic efforts of those on the front lines of public procurement. Each episode, we bring you the latest trends, tips, and real stories from procurement trailblazers like you who work tirelessly to bring positive impact to the agencies and communities you serve. Together, let's elevate the field of public procurement to new heights. Now, pull up a chair and let's gather around the bonfire. Our show is about to begin.
Hello and welcome to the Inside Public Procurement Podcast. My name is Tung Law and I'm the podcast producer at Bonfire, a Unisolutions brand. We are an e-procurement solution used by over 600 public agencies in North America. On this episode, we're listening in on a talk we hosted alongside NIGP. Bonfire's Stephen Cook is joined by Sherry Weir, partner at Carney & Company, and Andrew Janos, Deputy Director of Procurement and Material Management at Fairfax County Government, to talk about our continued theme of reporting and compliance, especially when it comes to grant funding. We take a deep dive into the challenges in assessing grant funding, the federal grant lifecycle, and compliance factors, and things you can do to improve your procurement processes for grant program compliance and beyond. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the episode.
Hey, folks. Good to see you. I was saying before, we're excited to be here today. And thank you so much to the NIGP for organizing today's conversation. So this talk today is here hosted by Bonfire. And recently, Bonfire became part of the Unisolutions brand. And for those that don't know, Unisolutions is a leading provider of purpose-built cloud-based solutions to over 2,000 government organizations across North America. And our best-in-class suite includes solutions for procurement. So folks like we are here today, payments, grant management, budgeting, permitting, and even K-12 administration. Together, Unisolutions is really empowering digital transformation and streamlining of a lot of those core processes to really propel public sector progress. So really excited to be here. Let's start with talking about our agenda for today so we can get into the meat and potatoes. So we're going to start by talking about, you know, why is this important? Why should we care about grant reporting and compliance? Then we're going to move into some roundtable questions where Andrew and Sherry and I are going to go off and we're going to have some conversations. And I'm really excited about this piece. We're going to have some interactive polls. So we're looking forward to seeing some participation from the group. And then Andrew's going to lead us through how his team is working through the federal grant lifecycle. And he's got some really great resources and information to share as well. So to start here, we're going to do some quick introductions. I'll start because I'm currently talking. I think that's a good place to start from. My name is Stephen Cook. I am an e-procurement solutions expert here at Bonfire, a Unisolutions brand. And I focus on working with agencies in the Northeast of the United States and into Canada as well. But without further ado, I'll pass the torch off to Andrew and he can introduce himself.
Good afternoon. I'm Andrew Janos. I'm one of the deputy directors here with Fairfax County in the Department of Procurement and Material Management. The divisions I support are contracts division, but we also have a grants and sponsored programs division. And so having those two divisions together in one umbrella is something I'll be kind of talking through a little bit more later on. Sherry?
Hi, my name is Sherry Weir. I'm a partner with Carney & Company. So Carney is located in Northern Virginia. We're a CPA firm and we service only public sector. We've been doing that since 1985. We're not a small company. We have well over 800 professionals that report to us. We provide grants management. We stood up the CFO's office for the Office of Recovery Program at the Department of Treasury. We support HHS and we support grants compliance for the Restore Act. So we have a broad base of grants management expertise.
Thank you, Sherry. All right, let's dig into it. So yeah, why is this such a hot topic right now? I'm going to share a few thoughts here, then we'll get some input from Sherry and Andrew as well. So as we're all aware, there are historic levels of funding that's being invested into a wide range of initiatives, from transportation infrastructure, to broadband, to energy, and even over into climate change. Now, last year, we surveyed public procurement professionals and asked them what their biggest priority was for 2023. And one of them was ensuring compliance and risk mitigation. So if you're here watching this webinar, I'm going to bet that that's probably high on your priority list too. Now, this topic is especially hot right now because of how complex some of these programs are. And in some cases, you're often reporting multiple agencies at either the state or the federal level, which presents a whole new set of challenges in some respects. Now, also, funding of this side comes with a ton of risk in terms of fraud, waste, abuse. So making sure that you're crafting your reporting and compliance processes is really vital to ensuring maximum impact and lessening your risks with the funds that you're hoping to encumber. Because really the reality is here that the funding is sorely needed in many areas. Let's speak to transportation infrastructure as an example, where a lot of these critical projects have really been left on the back burner. But despite the strict rules that come with this funding, taking the time necessary to access and allocate these funds carefully with a thorough review of requirements is well worth it and frankly quite necessary in today's day and age. Now, here's a few examples of some funding that came in to law either late 2021 and into early 2022. There is the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, where a lot of transportation infrastructure initiatives, including some climate change and EV charging initiatives, were brought into play. The Inflation Reduction Act, and of course, under ARPA, the state and local fiscal recovery funds. So, Andrew, from your perspective here, why would you say that this is such a hot topic, and why should procurement care about grant funding and reporting and compliance?
Well, I believe it definitely is a hot topic. There's significant federal dollars that are flowing through our communities right now. In Fairfax County alone, we have over $1 billion that's been received from different stimulus efforts, the CARES Act, ARPA. Our annual spend is over $600 million in federal funding. But the biggest thing is that all these federal dollars can have a significant impact in our local communities. And it's important that we're using it in a manner that has significant impact, but also maintains public trust. And so that's where the whole compliance factor comes into play, is maintaining that public trust, but then also creating the opportunity for future funding opportunities. If we misuse the funds or we have findings related to how we utilize our current funding, it can definitely impact those future opportunities.
Thanks for sharing there, Andrew. And I know, Sherry, this is something that we've talked to in length as well. Would you mind weighing in as well?
Well, I'll just pick up right where Andrew left off, right? Compliance is helps you assure future funding, right? So an organization that is ill-prepared, either through failure to adhere to grant requirements, that they haven't actually thought out their internal controls, that they haven't adequately maintained their documentation as required by compliance, surely will not be on the top 10 list for the next round of funding. So it's so much better for agencies in any level to work through all these things in advance, to be prepared in preparation, and to ensure their organization has all of the rules, regulations. They understand that and they stay in deep contact with their grant-making entities. So to Andrew's point, those billions of dollars aren't just an impact on the local community, they're an impact on every taxpayer. So every taxpayer has a vested interest in ensuring that our grant monies are spent wisely and well.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, it seems like there's a sort of responsibility to spend those dollars within accordance and fairly, like you mentioned there. We spoke to challenges briefly earlier here, and just want to go over a few of these talking points here. Starting with capacity. Now, capacity is something we keep hearing about over and over as a number one challenge. And really, when we think about the labor shortage that's affected agencies, it's also affected the vendors. And finding the capacity to really apply that funding, to do that reporting, and have the bodies necessary to complete that work is really becoming a challenge. So here's something to think about. When you're allocating funds, do you and your vendors actually have the human resources to execute said projects? That really does bring up a lot of big points here, but I think it's an important thing just to ruminate on. We talk about these reporting requirements, and hefty is used here. The reporting requirements, as you can probably imagine, are a pretty heavy lift on their own. And for a lot of funding projects that are under the state and local fiscal recovery fund, especially for these larger orgs, there is a large amount of effort that's required to make sure you're compliant and to have the internal controls necessary to make the projects happen. And so with so much work associated with applying for this grant funding in the first place, then there's even more work, again, to allocate and spend it. It's really becoming a challenge for smaller agencies or understaffed teams to really access said funding. So we think about sometimes looking at cooperative contracts as a way to bridge these gaps. And one thing that we've learned here is that cooperatives are awesome, but it's really important to spend the time to review these agreements very thoroughly. But again, that's going to cause some challenges as well, because it takes a lot of time to do this review. Now, as we look into these dates and deadlines that are coming up, we're coming up to, you know, looking at the end of 2024, and there's a lot of pressure and moving pieces required to allocate these funds in the first place. And frankly speaking, there's a lot of uncertainty considering today's political and economic climates. We've been hearing that some are expressing concerns over potential clawbacks of unallocated funds with the ongoing debate over the debt ceiling, as a brief example here. And to add a little bit of salt to this, there's also some lingering inefficiencies. The influx of funding is really putting a spotlight on procurement, process issues, and bottlenecks. And that's why today's conversation is so important. What we're noticing is a lot of these current procurement systems and processes really weren't designed to handle this level of work in detail. Now, we were speaking with a digital transformation officer down in the city of Vernon, BC in Canada, and he told us about his experience and how really procurement tech not only supports recruitment, but also retention. Because if you're a millennial like I am, you know, I'm probably not going to tolerate inefficient technology when there's a better, more streamlined way to do things. Now, I don't want to say it's all doom and gloom. Most of these challenges are absolutely fixable. But these are just some things that, you know, your team does have control over and should be considering. And I really do believe there's an opportunity here to create a lasting, sustainable change to improve, you know, really how procurement operates to create an environment for optimized reporting and compliance. So as we look at this list here, Sherry, do any of these challenges stand out to you more than the others? Or is maybe there anything you want to add to this list?
Well, I think actually one of the things that I see missing from here is constant communication, right? You have to communicate with your grant making entities because rules change as the grants are underway. But two things that stand out to me are the process inefficiencies and the legacy tech and partial digitization. That partial digitization is a risk to any program. It ensures that there is a manual process intermixed with the digitized records. So your automation and your manual process can create some difficulties in matching, either matching your grant funds to the right award, to the right repayment schedule. Also process inefficiencies. I always get very concerned when organizations, they talk about, well, let's technology enable, let's implement new tech. But they still go into it without a well thought out and well-defined process. So it's a very important aspect to any program, especially grant program or anything that deals with money. You have to have a solid process, embedded internal controls, continuous monitoring, and make sure your process is right before you automate. So those are the things that I would focus on.
Thank you for that. How about you, Andrew? Do you have any thoughts on this?
So I think there's definitely many challenges that we face when we're working with grants, federal grants, state grants. And I think the list here definitely addresses many of them. Capacity, since the start of the pandemic, there has been the constant need to do more with, there were many resources, but not necessarily more staff resources. So having to navigate that has been a challenge for a number of years. The reporting requirements, they can be hefty at times. The challenge, there's many nuances tied to the reporting challenges. Sherry, I think, referenced that some of the reporting requirements have shifted, changed, and we've seen that with ARPA requirements, and that has been a challenge for many of our team members related to that. It can be overly complicated. I believe there's 83 different expenditure categories for ARPA funding. And then you go down in between those categories, there's much more that's needed. There have been changes with the SAM registration elements there, which have been part of the reporting requirements. And so those shifts have been a challenge at times because even for our closed contractual agreements, we've had to go back and modify and look and potentially get new information that wasn't required at the time. Allocation deadlines in general is one of the biggest challenges, I think, for a procurement department, because there is many times a lack of planning for procurement processes in relation to grant awards. Even when the grant award is coming through is a challenge for us because sometimes the award documentation is coming in maybe a month prior to the period of performance is supposed to begin. Sometimes the award documentation is coming in after the period of performance is supposed to begin, and that has implications if you have to do a procurement process. So many challenges there. I think, though, for me, one of the biggest challenge areas, and you don't necessarily have it on the list, is a lack of awareness of the requirements associated with federal funding and how you need to manage that. And that's something I know we're going to talk about a little bit more when we get into this, having a bigger understanding of not just focusing in on the procurement standards themselves, but having a bigger picture of the federal procurement grant or the federal grant cycle.
I'm looking forward to seeing you walk us through that, Andrew. Thank you. Thank you as well, Sherry. And like I mentioned before, we got some polls. Yes, this is exciting. So this is our first poll here. This is all around what your perceived biggest concern is about using funding. So feel free to give a quick answer in here. We'll let these answers circulate. And I don't want to add any color to the answers here, but Andrew, what would you say your biggest concern is about using funding?
So there's so much that could be included in other that I would definitely be, I don't want to sway the vote, but I would be going towards that other category. And for me, compliance is definitely one of those huge things. Something else in the other category for me personally, and for the county, when we look at things, is the alignment of the grant itself. Does the grant align to a purpose, to our strategic plan? And that, I think, is one of those many times people chase after grants, not understanding if it really aligns with the mission of the organization. And so that's something we really need to get stronger and strengthen our perspective on. The other thing that when we talk grants, and a big concern that people forget about sometimes, is post-grant. What are you going to do? For many situations, we develop a grant program that does wonderful things within the community, but then our community residents build up an expectation for that level of service. What are you going to do after that funding is no longer there? Also related to that is, if you have grant-funded positions, what are you going to do with those grant-funded positions? We want to encourage developing a strong workforce. And so those are things you need to take into account when you are applying for and potentially accepting those grant funds.
Sherry, are you in the other category as well? I saw you nodding a little bit there.
I'm definitely in the other category. I think that one of the biggest challenges to grant recipients is their lack of knowledge, right? So it's so critical that you're well-informed, that you understand all of the elements of your grant, and that you understand and your staff understands their role in ensuring the proper way to administer that grant. I think the biggest thing we run into oftentimes is, and we'll talk about this later, is the risk of subrecipients. It is your job as a grant recipient to administer the grant and its full life cycle, regardless of how it's distributed. So that education process, the separation of duties, strong internal controls, as speaking from the audit side of the house and the compliance side of the house, the better prepared an entity is, the more other they can avoid. But it's preparation and it's lack of understanding. And maybe that's tied to the lack of resources, right? If you don't have the resources to properly administer a grant, then every time you bring on new staff, they have to be trained. And that's a burden. That's a big burden on an entity. So yeah, I'm in the other camp.
We got 6% of, saying that they're not accessible to smaller organizations. We've got about a quarter saying that there's a lack of resources for grant applications, which I see Andrew's nodding. He can understand that one. Reporting requirements are too involved. 44%. Yeah, that's a big one. 0% on legacy software. That's interesting. And we do have 22% on the other category. Like Chris had mentioned, if you don't mind putting in what your other response was, we'd love to hear it. But Andrew, based on what we're seeing here for these poll results, is this surprising at all to you?
If people are forced to choose one option, then I guess not surprised that lack of resources is definitely popping up. And many folks right now are having to deal with the reporting requirements, which are very complicated. And I think talking here within Fairfax County, that's the one thing. There's so much here, so many requirements reporting that we can't do it alone. And nobody can be an expert in all aspects of the federal requirements. And so that's where we do very much rely on working with our peers in here within Fairfax. We have Department of Finance staff who help on the reporting side. They do the single audit, work with staff that are managing budget. So lack of resources, I understand that. And the reporting requirements would definitely stand out as well.
What do you think, Sherry?
Again, it's the lack of resources, right? It's more, I think it's not just lack of resources to do the reporting, but every grant program is so different, right? Mm. So every grant, you have to be so well organized. The organization of the program is essential to ensure everything's on a calendar, everything's on a checklist, and then to see where you have overlap. Some other things that we see that are a challenge is sometimes grant recipients aren't as aware as they should be about overlapping grants, right? The purpose of the grant, the funding of the program, how grant money might come from a different supporting source, and how that can actually impinge on your ability to report or maybe even stay compliant. So my thoughts are reporting requirements are as involved as the legislature made them. And the actual grant program did not come up with this on their own. So whenever you see a new grant program being advertised, put your two cents in. Comment on the public comment period to address the impact on the reporting entities and how it actually affects your organization, because that is a requirement by the Office of Management and Budget. If you're receiving federal grants, they have to reduce the impact on the recipients as much as possible. But if nobody comments, nobody gets the value of that.
Thank you for sharing that. And Chris beat me to the punch here, but yeah, I'm very excited to now have Andrew speak a little bit more about the federal grant lifecycle procurement standards. And I know he's really passionate about it. So I will gladly take a step back and let you take lead here. Thanks, Andrew.
Sounds good. But maybe while we're folks can put in their chat, I'm interested to know of the group that we have here, how many have had training in federal procurement? I know some of our organizations have had federal contracting with federal funds, but maybe in the chat, just to give us a feel of your experience level, that would be helpful. But what you're looking at here is basically a flowchart of the federal grant life cycle. When we see pre-award, this is at the federal level, what's occurring there, what the application process is, where us as jurisdictions are submitting in accordance with federal standards of the pre-award application. When you see award on here, this is from the federal level to a grant recipient. That grant recipient might be the federal entity to a state agency. It might be the federal agency directly to a local jurisdiction like Fairfax County. It can be multiple formats, but when we say award, it's basically from the federal level to a grant recipient entity. Post-award, we as procurement professionals, this is where our swim lane typically is focused. It is embedded in uniform guidance, is the procurement standards with federal funds. It is basically, I think it's 200, section 317 through 327. Embedded in that is all the requirements when you're working with federal funding for a procurement. It includes the elements for independent cost estimates, the details of what kind of allowable contract types you can utilize, the available methods of procurement, micro-purchase. What level does micro-purchase go up to? Unfortunately, if you go to the FAR, but those are all detailed in those methods of procurement. The fact that you have to do a contract cost or price analysis, the federally mandated Appendix 2 terms and conditions, all those things are broken out in subpart D, which is the post-award procurement standards. But that's only one piece of the grant lifecycle. You also have monitoring requirements that we as jurisdictions have to do as grant recipients, the closeout requirements, and also there's very important audit elements. So in the next slide, we're going to try to show you the bigger picture of how procurement staff have a role and or an opportunity to help with compliance across the full life cycle and or how it impacts what we do. This is another version of that same grant life cycle, but trying to highlight some of the areas where the pre-award process, where we as procurement professionals can have a strategic role in developing the grant application. We're not going to necessarily get involved in the grant application itself, but understanding the proposed relationships that are involved in that are huge. We're going to be talking about contractor subrecipients. Those are things that need to be figured out before you submit the grant application and the implications of whether your lower tier entity is going to be a contractor or subrecipient. Timelines. If somebody's going to be a contractor, building in procurement timelines, solicitation, if you're going to do RFPs, IFPs, whatever methodology you're going to pursue, you need to build that into your timeline. And knowing that upfront is definitely important. Resources. You have to have the staff resources or be requesting through that grant application support for resources to help manage those funds. Then you get to the award phase. You need to know how the federal government is classifying you as a grant recipient. That has lower tier requirements elements on what we can do. This is one of the biggest ones, 2 CFR 200 exemptions. We as procurement professionals, sometimes we don't know, but there are actually exemptions to competition that we can avoid that. But you have to know where to go and look for those requirements. SAM.gov, if you look up assistance listings numbers for each federal funds, it will tell you what sections of federal requirements apply to those federal dollars. Converse to that is that sometimes additional restrictions in those award documents, that even though it might be allowable by uniform guidance standards, that specific award documentation might have additional sets of requirements, that it's important we as procurement professionals are aware of that. It's important for you to know that period of performance that we need to expend those federal dollars within specific performance requirements. Also, this is one of the biggest ones for me as a procurement professional, knowing if there's any federal or pass-through terms conditions. Before, we heard that Section 200.327 of Uniform Guidance has federally mandated terms and conditions that need to be there. But there's also many times additional pass-through terms conditions, and we as procurement professionals are not going to know about that unless we actually see the award documents. And that is very important. A very basic example of that is ARPA. ARPA does not follow the regular uniform guidance retention period requirements. If you go through and look at the agreements that we have for ARPA, you'll see that it's 5 years beyond the final expenditure date. So for us, Fairfax County, our final expenditure date going from 2026, the retention period is actually through 2031. So we can have a problem there if you're following the regular requirements for federal funding. You need to be aware of what's in your pass-through terms conditions. Post-award, this is our wheelhouse of procurement, knowing procurement. But before you get to the procurement, you need to know what kind of relationship you're going to have. Is it a contractor? Is it a subrecipient? Or even if you've been working with ARPA money, you might have heard the third category called the beneficiary. What is it? What's the relationship? Because the relationship is going to dictate what avenue you need to take, whether it's a procurement or a subaward process, cost principles. There are restrictions on what you can buy with federal funding. Knowing what those cost principles are is essential. Risk assessments. Knowing who you're doing your business with is vital and mandatory if you're going to have certain kinds of relationships, such as a subrecipient relationship. Monitoring. Monitoring in some form, it's going to be different if it's a contractor or a subrecipient relationship, but you need to build out your monitoring program to address the type of procurement or the type of subrecipient you have. And when it comes to subrecipient, it should be a risk-based approach. You don't treat everybody the same. We have a risk assessment process that you must, when you have a subrecipient, you must go through a risk assessment process. And based off of that risk level will dictate the level of monitoring we have to do. Reporting, SAM.gov registration requirements. That's something unique that we've seen in ARPA requirements, the SAM registration component, but that is an element here is monitoring, making sure that who you're working with is not debarred, that you do it multiple times throughout that procurement relationship, but you need to continue to do that throughout that procurement relationship. You might be taking remedial action during the monitoring phase. Closeout. Closeout is a very, very important part of the process, making sure your final reports, your final payments are all done. Well, final reports, as a procurement professional, you might not think you have that much of a role in it because you're not actually doing those reports. It depends on your jurisdiction. However, we do interface many times with our contractors or our subrecipients that are giving us data or giving us performance measures that they need to feed your jurisdiction in order to complete your reporting requirements. So it is essential in our procurement, our contract or subaward relationships, that those timelines, those reporting requirements are detailed and conform with those federal grant requirements. Disposition, many folks tend to forget about that, but if you're buying assets with federal funding, there are specific disposition requirements based off of the fair market value. important that you're keeping track of those from the start of the process through the end. Record keeping, mentioned ARPA. It's vital to know what the specific retention requirements are associated with those federal funds. And audits, ultimately, we as grant recipients are usually, well, it depends on how much in federal funding you're getting, but if you're crossing the $750,000 threshold, you're going to be doing single audits. There are very specific requirements with single audits that are prescribed in uniform guidance that talk about the requirement to procure auditors and also be asking for peer reviews. These are mandatory requirements in uniform guidance that we as procurement professionals need to potentially be aware of, but also possibly assist in that procurement action. And who ultimately is the record holder for these documents? Because ultimately, our federal funding agencies, our pass-through entities, they're going to be coming and doing reviews, compliance reviews, audit reviews of us and how we spent our funds. We need to have a clear understanding of those records, who holds those records, who is going to produce those records when they are requested.
Thank you, Andrew. Hope that was insightful. So we keep hearing about this sub-recipient thing, and I understand that we have a bit of a mix of experience when it comes to federal grant training here, but I'm really curious just to open this up to the group, and please use the chat as needed here. Putting your best guess, if you're not sure what a subrecipient is, feel free to let us know what you think it is. And if you do know, feel free to also let us know. And then we'll leave this chat open for about 30 seconds, and then we'll have a conversation about what actually a subrecipient is. And I found that conversation there very, very important, Andrew, especially as we start to, as procurement starts to get involved more with federal grants and understanding where they can actually be a help versus a blocker. So it's really good that you're able to review that with us today. Do not know. Okay. Thank you for the honesty, Greg. We'll leave a few more seconds here, see if anyone else is brave enough to admit that they're not quite sure. Okay. Andrew, can I put you on the spot again? Is that okay?
Sure, go for it.
Yeah. So, Andrew, help me out here. Help Greg out, help me out. What is a subrecipient? Let's talk about it.
All right. And maybe in the chat, something else that people can respond back on is uniform guidance. When I say uniform guidance, do folks know what that is? I was going back through the chat comments here and level of experience with federal funding. And I know those that may not have gone through it may not have that much experience. But the term subrecipient is defined in uniform guidance. And when those modifications came out, I think it was back in 2014 is when it started. Many jurisdictions, we had to have our processes in place by 2018. You had two categories because the federal government really tried to consolidate instead of using subrecipient, contractor, vendor. You now had two. You had a subrecipient and a contractor. So uniform guidance defines when we as a grant recipient are giving those funds to another non-federal entity, we need to determine what that lower tier relationship is, whether it's a contractor, a subrecipient, or a beneficiary is the new one, which many of us may not have worked with, but is really something we've seen since the stimulus funding has come out tied to the pandemic. But a subrecipient tends to be more of a strategic partner. They are receiving these federal funds from you that you're enabling them to carry out part of the federal award, basically part of that federal purpose that you're giving them those funds. There is a under uniform guidance, a checklist process that helps you determine if somebody is a contractor or subrecipient. And so that's where we have, I think, as one of the resources folks can get access to afterwards, you can see the Fairfax County version of that. That walks through, but it relates all back to uniform guidance. But you have to ask yourself a couple questions in that relationship with that lower tier entity. And those questions will help you to determine if they are a subrecipient, if they are carrying out part of that federal purpose. One of the biggest and most important questions is determining eligibility. That entity you're going to be working with, are they going to be making a determination of whether that lower tier entity, or if they're going to be making a determination of who is eligible to receive the federal assistance. I don't know for some of the jurisdictions that you have out there, if you get Head Start money, if you get community service block grant money, community development block grant money, there are specific eligibility requirements associated for clients to be served with those dollars. Who's determining who gets served with those dollars? Is it you as a jurisdiction, or are you giving that money to another entity and they're determining? they're most likely a subrecipient, because that is such an important element to this relationship and such an important aspect to spending those federal dollars. Reporting. Are the reports you're collecting from your lower tier entity directly feeding the reports that have to go back to the federal government? That's another factor that they're most likely a subrecipient versus a contractor. Programmatic decision making. Are you entrusting the entity you're working with to really make some programmatic decisions on how things are going to be structured, giving them more leeway in that structure because they are experts in that field? Well, they're most likely going to be a subrecipient. The other thing is the public purpose versus providing goods or services for the benefit of the grant recipient. Are you asking them to do something that's to the public good tied to those federal dollars? Or are they just giving you a good or a service that's really benefiting you as a local jurisdiction? If they're benefiting the local jurisdiction, they're going to be more of a contractor, versus if it's benefiting the public good under those federal funds, that's another factor that would lean towards them being a subrecipient. So it's not one question in and of itself makes you a subrecipient, but you have to look at the full nature of how you are working with that entity. And that will help you determine whether somebody is going to be a subrecipient or a contractor. But when you make that determination, there are significant downstream requirements in how you're going to approach that relationship. And that's where it's very important that you know what those requirements are. And we, as grant recipients of those federal dollars, you have an obligation to make sure that you are doing that determination process. You know, when you're giving these federal funds to somebody else, are they a contractor, subrecipient, or a beneficiary? Because just calling them a contractor, if what they're really doing falls into those other spheres, that does not mean that you've made the correct determination. And that means that you ultimately could have an audit finding, which can impact current funding as well as future funding opportunities.
Thanks, Andrew. Okay, so we talked about challenges before, and let's dig into them a little bit more. So what are some of the more challenging grant requirements and how are you tracking them? Sherry, I'm going to toss this one off to you. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this.
Well, I think the word challenge is very subjective, right? It depends on the entity, the size of the grant. But I think some of the most challenging part of grants requirements are data retention, document retention, and reporting deadlines. There's also, to Andrew's point about subrecipients, understanding the relationship and the requirements of managing a subrecipient are something that should not be undertaken lightly. To select a subrecipient that can support your grant program requires that risk assessment. Andrew talked about it earlier. Conducting a thorough risk assessment and being able to monitor that subrecipient throughout the life of the grant is absolutely essential. And some of the biggest things we find when we're doing compliance is that subrecipients were not eligible to begin with. It's not unusual, whether it be a contractor relationship or a subrecipient relationship, you didn't just check whether or not that recipient is eligible to receive federal funds. That should be the very first thing you do. And if they're a subrecipient, you have to understand and assess their experience with federal grants. Do they understand their own requirements and their own relationships? The biggest challenges also that will fall on reporting is the cross-reporting, right? And then the additional requirements. So we know that Buy America, the BABA rules came down. So now we have to Buy America and Build America. So those are going to be part of the grant making. We also have grant making requirements for small business utilization. You have to be prepared to verify and validate your small business utilization. When you start expending those grant funds, what percentage of the grant is actually a subrecipient or a contractor that is a small or disadvantaged business? So there's a lot of compliance requirements. One of the challenges we see is people just don't read it. You know, read the document, read the regulations, understand your requirements. And if you don't understand those requirements, engage with your grant making agency. They want you to do it correctly. They don't want to ever have to claw back. They don't want to issue findings. They don't want to issue a bad audit report. And the reason is it reflects on them just as well as it does the grantee, right? Because if a grant making entity is not providing adequate oversight and support to their grant recipients, they're not ultimately doing their responsibilities in accordance with the grant itself. So keep a checklist. Got to have a checklist. I know it sounds silly, but it's a checklist. Checklists are simple, but they're something that's easy to easily understood. Keep a calendar. Know when things are due. Those reporting requirements, there's not a whole lot of leeway, right? And you're often given reminders. Don't disregard your requirements when you have a change in staff. One of the things we see is things fall down when there's a staff change, that the individual didn't appropriately transition their responsibility to the new grant manager, right? So oftentimes, if you see transition coming, if you see a staff break coming, plan for that. Ensure that the roles and responsibilities are adequately separated, adequately segregated, but are definitely assigned. So segregation of duties, consistent internal controls, monitoring your subrecipients, and monitoring yourself. Something else, one of the things is you don't want to put too much burden on a subrecipient, all right? Put the amount of burden necessary to ensure that you remain compliant. Their reporting should merge with yours so that when you report their data, there's not a whole lot of changes you have to make when you're reporting yours, but don't overburden them, because in the long run, the government can actually, during an audit, request your entire financials. So we see a lot of problem with expenses. Appropriately documenting your expenses are critical to your management of these funds. So keep good records. If the government tells you something, if they send it to you in email, keep that email. If they tell you something in a text, take a snapshot. If they tell you something on the phone, ask for it in writing. Everything the government tells you, whether it deviates from your original award or not, is part of the record. So always keep yourself adequately covered and prepared, because sometimes you're told something that maybe was inappropriate.
Thank you for that. That's some good advice for the overall audience here. And I appreciate your thoughts on that. Now we're going to continue on here. And so Andrew, in 1 minute or less, how are you and your team using technology to ensure that your procurement is audible and compliant? What does that look like for Fairfax County today?
So Fairfax County has definitely engaged the Bonfire system in terms of utilizing that as an online software system for collecting our solicitations and bids, as well as evaluating. So a key part with your procurement processes when you're working with grant funds is you need to be able to document. You need to be able to make sure you can produce that documentation. And so that's where for us, Bonfire, not only has it had significant impacts with working with our vendor community and a lot of efficiencies we've seen there, but it's also allowed us to have better documentation that when it comes to those financial reviews, those audits, we will be able to produce those procurement records, which is a requirement that you maintain your procurement record.
Great answer. I'm a little bit biased, but great answer there, Andrew. Appreciate it. Let's move on to another poll. Everyone loves polls. We got some good engagement last time. So let's see if we can do it again. So our second poll for today is, again, around challenges. So what is the most common challenge in your current procurement process? Now, is it disjointed communication? Is it document version control and storage? Lack of clear, accessible policies and procedures? Stakeholder accountability engagement or other? Other seems to be a fan favorite today. So feel free to hit other if you do have something else you want to add, and share that in the chat and we will certainly discuss. Now, just based on what I'm seeing here, Sherry, I know that you're not directly working in procurement, but from the agencies that you've worked with, what would you say based on this list is something that you see most commonly being an issue?
Lack of clear, accessible policies and procedures.
Yeah, that's a big one. Is that something that you've experienced as well, Andrew? I mean, prior to Bonfire, of course.
So lack of clear, accessible policies, procedures is something I saw, but Fairfax has addressed. So we now have policies, procedures that are very clear. For me, the biggest challenge is knowledge of those policies and procedures widely within our local government.
Is Fairfax working on bridging that gap with, educational sessions within the different departments? Yeah.
Absolutely. We're working across multiple departments to develop a training curriculum that helps identify for our grant departments, our user agencies, so that they can get a better understanding of federal requirements and help them navigate that process so that it's not a situation where they've applied for and accepted the funding and now need to figure everything out. It really needs to be done ahead of time.
That seems like a really proactive approach. And I know, obviously, things have happened in the past, but it's good to be on top of it today to make sure that going forward, everything is the way it should be. Okay, look at this. We've actually got a pretty good spread here. So 18% of today's responses were around the disjointed communication on many platforms. We got 9% on document version, control, and storage. 27% of lacking clear, accessible policies and procedures, to your point, Andrew. And 36% on stakeholder accountability and engagement. And we have some other as well. And I know Tanya had mentioned management and upper level staff being a potential challenge in procurement. Based on these results here, Sherry, does this surprise you at all?
Well, I wasn't surprised by a lack of clear, accessible policies and procedures. I am surprised by stakeholder accountability and engagement. And my question would be, who are the stakeholders you're thinking about? Is it senior level management, accountability and engagement? Is it procurement staff? Is it program grant staff? So when we're talking about stakeholders, what are we talking about?
I would say that likely it would be anyone that's involved in the evaluation. There we go. Senior level management and internal clients. Yeah, good one, Rashonda. Internal clients. Yeah. What's your take on that, Andrew? When we talk about stakeholders, based on your experience at Fairfax, is that relating to what Rashonda is saying, or would you have another opinion on this matter?
So stakeholder accountability, I think, is definitely a huge factor. And when we're working with grants, it's not just one person that's responsible. It really is across the team. Procurement staff have a focus, an element we need to be accountable for. Our finance staff, who have expertise in grants and understanding that, have an element. But I think the biggest thing is stakeholder accountability. It, for us, is probably at the grant user department level, understanding that they've gotten these grant funds. There are significant responsibilities they need to follow, and we will help them navigate that, but they need to be accountable for that. And I think that is definitely one of those challenges that we see, and especially if they were unaware of those elements that they would be accountable for before they applied.
Gotcha. Tanya mentioned to the end users want Absolutely. To have procurement staff to write technical specifications. Yeah, that makes sense. Thanks for sharing that. Let's talk about how we're gathering and using data today in procurement process. Now, real question here, right, is who is this data most valuable to? But I'm curious, Andrew, how are you going about currently in your process and gathering said data?
So we collect different data, but it's challenging when we talk data tied to grants, because what's most important, it's really who are you gathering it for? Because the data that our grantors are typically focused on is the performance measures that are being accomplished with those grant funds. And so there's many different elements to that and many different folks that are part of that. One of the things we do look at when we're talking grants and lower tier relationships is the compliance with our contractors and subrecipients. Are we having findings, corrective actions that need to be addressed? Are they in compliance with the contracts? That is something that we specifically track. The timelines on a procurement process, I know that's something we look at, but timelines when you're talking grants can be very, very challenging because typically we're getting these documents so late in the process. So there's many elements to that. But Sherry, I'm wondering from the data side, if there's anything that stands out to you.
It depends on, again, you're talking about an internal process. We are an after the fact. We're either doing remediation because of audit findings, or we're asking agencies to comply. We're doing a compliance assessment, a review, essentially. So there are reviews and then there are audits. And one of the things that we have found, especially in during reviews of some very large programs, is that grant recipients want to inundate you with data. Not data we need, not data we asked for, but just huge volumes of data. And it makes us immediately suspicious. The moment you inundate me with data, it tells me you're either trying to hide something or you can't respond to my request. So, I mean, we hear about these stories about, you know, Congress asked for something, so the White House sent three truckloads, right? So obviously in the next 3 years, nobody can read that. So to us, we don't want the data unless we're actually going to assess it and it's part of our review and compliance program. But the data we're asking for is all in alignment with your policies, your procedures, and your reporting requirements that were dictated by the grant documents. So the data that you're gathering and using in your procurement process needs to support that grant. Now, ultimately, when we start an assessment, we don't go to the procurement office. We go to the grant recipient. So it's up to the grant recipient to be able to identify, clarify, and pull in the document requests that we send them. And those document requests are well understood. They have plenty of time to do it. But ultimately, the procurement process supports the grant recipient and not ultimately the other way around. So that's what we look for.
Thank you, Sherry. Well, we've got one more poll here. Now, this is one that speaks to procurement technology. So this is going to be a quick poll because I know we're coming up quick to time and we did have a few questions come in. So what tech do you feel would have the most impact on your current procurement process? I know that Andrew mentioned that he is using the Bonfire suite with Fairfax County. But so I'd be curious to hear what the audience thinks about what tech would really help them. Yeah, a large amount of people saying catalog of RFP templates would be helpful. I guess to jumpstart those requisitions, 38% of respondents say that. Pure data and benchmarks at 25%, standardized intake forms at 13%, and collaborative RFP drafting tools at 25%. Yeah, it seems like there is a focus on trying to get ahead of these RFPs. So thank you for sharing that. Now, before we start to wind down here, there was one quick question, Andrew, that I'd like for you to quickly answer here. Greg Lathbury had asked around the subrecipient idea, you know, as I'm in the education sector, would a private school that we have set aside funds for their use be a subrecipient or not? That was the question that came up earlier.
So step one is look at the agreement that you're getting that bring those federal funds to you. You need to understand how you're being classified, because how you're being classified can impact the lower tier relationships. So, for example, whoever's giving you those federal dollars, are they saying you're a contractor? Because if you're being classified a contractor, then if you're giving that money to somebody else, they can't then become a subrecipient. So that's one of the elements there. They might be classifying you, especially if it was tied to stimulus, you might be a beneficiary. And then once again, you can't jump out of that. However, if you're being classified as a subrecipient, there's federally mandated elements that agreement that's bringing the money to you needs to include. And so that's going to tell you, number one, what you're being classified. And if you're unsure, as Sherry mentioned earlier, you need to have communications with your grantor. You need to go back and say, what, these are federal funds. You're telling me these are federal funds. I need to know what you're classifying me as. What am I designated as? But then absolutely, if you are a subrecipient and you are giving that money to somebody else at a lower tier relationship, you need to understand, what are you designating them? Are they a contractor, a subrecipient, or a beneficiary?
Thank you for that, Andrew. From everyone at Bonfire here and from the rest of the panelists, we thank you for joining us today on the NIGB Talk, and we look forward to speaking again soon.
You've been listening to Inside Public Procurement by Bonfire, a Unisolutions brand. If you like what you've heard, make sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you have an idea for an episode or want to come on as a guest, email us at hello.bonfire@unisolutions.com. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.